So welcome, everybody. I'm Dr. Brian Walsh. I've been a chiropractor for 21 years now. I was an electrical engineer before I did chiropractic, and it was a chiropractor that kept me from having surgery, and I got excited about it, and I liked nutrition, and so I jumped ship and went back to school, and so I'm a bioengineer now instead of electrical engineer because I get to work with bodies, which is actually more complicated. But we'll be talking about, you know, that. The title sounds a little dramatic, fix your gut, save your life, you know, kind of thing. But it's really, it's not too far off, because the more and more research they do, the more they're realizing how the gut is interconnected to every part of your body. And that it's kind of been a neglected part of medicine for many years. They're slowly starting to get on board. It's more the functional medicine docs and nutrition people like me that have been saying this for years, that we have to address this to get well. And we'll kind of talk about that here. I always like to start with this because it embodies how I feel and how I view things. It says, the doctor of the future will give no medicine, but will interest his patients in the care of the human frame and diet and in the cause and prevention of disease, right? That was by Thomas Edison, like 100 years ago plus, because he saw the value of spinal alignment and taking care of the frame, of actually the diet as a foundation, and then the cause and prevention, right? Because medicine's really good at treating things, but not always addressing causes. So, and that's what we're about. When I was an engineer, when you found the cause of why that circuit wasn't working, then it started to work again, right? And you would run around the bush until you found that problem. And I think the same thing's happening in traditional medicine. They just keep on giving people medication and different things, and they go on all these different things and drugs, and then they have side effects, and they have their place, but it's just not working for chronic disease, right? Just not working for chronic disease. And that's where the natural stuff comes in. So just a couple of facts. They estimate, like with digestive problems and stuff in the U.S. conservatively, it's like 100 million people a year complain of some kind of issues that way, which is a lot of people. Sales of the like things like Prilosec, Nexium, that kind of stuff. Usually, you're talking to the tune around $10 billion or so. That's a conservative number. So it's a huge industry, right? And it's become a big problem. It didn't used to be this bad 50 years ago. People didn't have all these kind of digestive problems. So it's really becoming more and more of a problem. And I think that's also one of the reasons why the link to other health problems. Right, because when as the gut goes, a lot of times your health goes. And so Hippocrates, who is the father of medicine, you know, they called him, and that was one of his sayings, all disease begins in the gut. Like he thought that eons ago, right, that that's where the problem started. And the reason why it is so interconnected is because all of our major body systems, like our immune system, like 60-70% of your immune system and how it generates is in the gut, is part of the gut. So that's why when people have gut problems, they can have all kinds of other problems. It's easier to get colds, candida, all these different immune problems, autoimmune conditions, because there's a direct connection between our immune system and our gut. It's linked to your hormonal system as well. Serotonin, for example, right? It's your feel-good neurotransmitter. The majority of that's produced in your gut, in your digestive tract. So when these things get out of balance, your hormones can get out of balance. And that's why there's this big link between like autism spectrum disorder type kids in the gut. A lot of those are unstable mentally because their gut is unstable. So that's how these interconnections work and can happen. There's also, whenever the gut is not working properly or it's what they call leaky gut, we'll talk about, when that's out of balance, then things like your skin and lungs, they have to work harder because those are also organs of elimination, right? Your skin and your lungs. And when the intestines and gut isn't doing its job, those have to work harder. So you can actually have more of those type problems when you have gut problems, especially rashes and those kind of things that are chronic. Many times something is out of balance with your good guys and bad guys in your gut. Different things, right? Heartburn and acid reflux are probably some of the most common things that people think of when that's like a sign of something out of balance. But things like pain, chronic pain or headaches sometimes are generated from some imbalance here. that's not allowing chemicals to process properly. A very common thing I hear is fatigue. So some people, they eat foods that they're sensitive to. It doesn't even have to be an allergy, but a sensitivity. Fatigue is one of the primary effects that it'll have on the body. They'll just get tired, especially shortly after eating. You know, they'll feel it within 30 minutes to an hour if it's a reaction type thing. I mentioned skin problems. Sinus problems, very common. So sinus things that don't clear up with normal things, it's usually like a liver or a gut problem that is allowing this sinus thing to perpetuate, because it almost creates like a backup in the sinuses. So that's something to always rule out whenever there's chronic sinus issues. Yeah, besides allergy and that kind of thing. I mentioned hormonal imbalances, and then mood behaviors, right? Or any of those behavioral kind of things. We've gotten so many kids better behaviorally by cleaning up their diet and getting their gut fixed. They just turn into normal kids again, because you get the junk out of them and get those other bad things out. And I mentioned autoimmune conditions. So because there's so much of the immune system related to the gut, when it's, you've got a lot of bad guys in there, so to speak, you know, like candida or parasites or something, they produce their own chemicals that are bad, and they mess up your own chemical system. And so that can lead to autoimmune conditions that make you more susceptible. So there's really a lot of things, interconnections that happen when this goes bad. And when you look at how we used to eat 100 years ago to now, it has just dramatically changed so much. You know, most of the farming was organic back then, right? They didn't have these heavy-duty commercial farming techniques, and it was mostly local farmers. You got your food from your local guy, you know, pretty much 100 years ago. Or you traded chickens with them or something, you know what I mean? Back then they did a lot of that bartering. But now we're, you know, pretty much industrialized, and you can just go to Walmart or wherever. And the problem with that is that when you bought stuff locally, you could get it quickly and you could use it fairly well. And you used it before it spoiled, typically, right? But in the industrial situation, stuff has to store for a long time, right? They have to store it on shelves. It has to stay in warehouses or whatever. And the only way you do that is by adding preservatives and all these other things that increase shelf life. And as a result of that, it helps things last longer, but the nutrition goes out the door, you know? And then you pack pesticides and all these different things they put on things, and artificial stuff. And then it becomes what I call a non-food, right? They call it food, but it's not the food that God designed. You know, it's this very different thing than you bought from the farmer down the road. And we've had a lot of years of that now, especially the past 50. You know, ever since the whole McDonald's and fast food thing started in the 50s, that began, in my opinion, the decline of our gut health, because it just started getting really processed food. Things like overuse of, so it's okay to take an occasional antacid or something like that if you have something like that, but when you take them for long periods of time, they throw off your good enzymes and your hydrochloric acid in your body. So you don't want to do that for a long time. Same thing with the Nexium and Prilosec. If you look in the medical books, those are only supposed to be used 3 to 6 months. That's the time frame that those are supposed to be used on, and then you wean off. But people are on those for years. I got people, they come in 10 years, they've been on these things. But especially for women, when they do them a long time, they're at a higher risk for bone osteoporosis, because they interfere with your absorption of minerals, and that's not good for long-term use. So the thing is to use them temporarily, calm the inflammation down, and then you fix the gut so you don't need them, right? That's the ideal scenario that you would do there. There are different nutritional deficiencies that can cause some of these things, like B vitamins and those type of things, kind of in that nutritional deficiency category. And then toxins, right? So we're exposed to so many more toxins than we were 50, 100 years ago. And those interfere with the way every process works in the body, including the digestive tract. So sometimes doing a detox program will actually help people's gut get back into sync again. So there's lots of different things that interfere. And this is a big one that's probably in the past 20 years has been even worse. As your stress level goes up, your digestion goes down, right? It's inverse. And because when you're running from a lion, you don't care about digestion, right? You just want to survive. And so the body automatically shuts down your enzyme production, your hydrochloric acid production, and You have a very thin mucus lining that lines your throat and your stomach and your intestines. When you're under stress for a long time, it thins out. So you're more likely to get ulcers, irritable bowel, that kind of stuff, because you're no longer producing that good protection in your gut. And so some people, they're under stress all the time nowadays. It's like it never lets up anymore for some folks. And those folks, if you don't address that stress factor through their job, their family, whatever it is, then they won't get the full healing response because it just won't get over that stress factor. So that's a big one we always look at with folks too. I mentioned the medication, short-term use only. That's really how they're meant to be used for a short period of time until you fix the cause. Once you get to that, then you don't need them anymore. You should be able to wean off of them. And it's important because if someone does have like the reflux stuff and they're ignoring it, and if it's gone on too long and it's not addressed, then it sets you up for cancer, right? Especially esophageal cancer. And that's why the medical folks get so freaked out and put you on the Prilosec and the Nexium and those kind of things, because that is the trend. If it stays there long enough and you get all these erosions, it can lead to cancer. And so that's why some people stay on those things, but they never get the cause. So you want to get the cause, then you can wean off of those things. And something about those too, especially those Prilosec ones and the Nexiums, you should never stop those things cold turkey, because you will get such a rebound reflux and acid burn feeling, because your body's used to having that drug in your body. So it's taken me 3, 6 months to get people off of those sometimes, because you have to do it so slow while you heal the digestive tract and then slowly wean them off. Because if you don't, they'll just fall apart. They just feel miserable if they try to stop that stuff. And that's what some people make the mistake of. Oh, I tried to get off, but I just keep getting worse. That's because it was done wrong. It's too fast. They tried to come off. So slow is really the name of the game when it comes to trying to remove yourself from that. There's different testing that you can do. There's the studies they do where they look at your upper GI and lower GI, and that has value to it. There's different tests for like leaky gut that they can do, which is when it's leaky, it just means it's the protective barrier I mentioned of that mucus lining is kind of deteriorated, and it lets bad things in and good things out. So it's not a good thing to have. And you're more likely to have aches and pains in your joints when that happens. But one of the things I use is something called nutrition response testing, which is a muscle testing or kinesiology form of testing. That sometimes when the medical test doesn't show everything why it's there, then this will help find the causes. Like, for example, if someone gets an allergy test for gluten or dairy or something like that, and it comes back negative, right? Well, you don't have that problem. But sometimes someone will have a sensitivity or an intolerance, right? That will not show on these allergy tests. But yet, it's as bad as an allergy because they really react badly or poorly to it. With the muscle test, we can pick up whether it's an allergy or a sensitivity. And either way, you avoid the problem, and then the body starts to heal. But sometimes you get a false sense of, oh, I can eat that, when, well, really you can't because you're sensitive to it. So those kind of tests, the more alternative muscle testing can help find those things that you can't always find with the medical testing. Because sometimes you have to do something different, to get the answer. So there's a kind of a system, it's called the four R's of when you're trying to address these gut problems. And the first one is to remove whatever the problem is, right? So if you have a food you're sensitive or allergic to, we usually have people do at least a 90-day elimination on whatever the sensitive food is, to give your body time to calm down. If there's infections in your gut, like candida, or a viral infection or a parasitic infection, a lot of people, especially medical doctors, if you talk about parasites to a medical doctor, a lot of them think you're crazy because they just think it's a third world thing. And it has become so bad in just in general, I think. But I see lots of people walking in here with parasites, and you get rid of them. And it doesn't have to be, a lot of people think of worms when they think of parasites, but that's only one category. A lot of these are microscopic and they're hard to find. And they don't always show up in stool samples. So we use the muscle testing to find that, and then use either herb or homeopathy to knock it out, of your system. But if those are in your gut and they can stay there for years, they can come and go. You'll never stabilize your gut. So you got to remove whatever bad guys in there, whether it's a food or an infection. And stress, right? I mentioned how bad stress is. If people can't moderate their stress, they'll never get 100%. They'll get better, but they won't get 100%. So that's the first thing, remove. The second thing is repair. And so once you got rid of the bad guys, it's the inflammation calms down. But there's things like glutamine, which is an amino acid that has a really good healing effect on your digestive tract. Zinc is another one. Some of the B vitamins are helpful for that. There's different herbs like slippery elm can be beneficial. Even something that can be a good alternative for the Prilosec and that kind of stuff is DGL. It's a type of licorice. It's real licorice. It's not that chewy stuff that we ate as a kid. But it's a herbal extract, and you chew that before meals, and it has a really good coating effect on the stomach and the esophagus. So some people, that's one of the things I use to wean people off the Prilosec and those other things, because it can actually calm it down and do some healing in there. So that's the repairing process. And then if someone is like low in enzymes, or one thing that definitely changes as we get older is our hydrochloric acid production is not as good when we age. And one of the problems with that is if you don't have enough of that, you don't break down calcium as well, and your B vitamins don't get broken down as well. So that's why that can cause other problems when you don't have good hydrochloric acid. So some people, especially as they age, they just feel better and digest food better with a hydrochloric acid supplement, and or a pancreatic enzyme. The pancreas produces all these enzymes for your body to break down food. So sometimes you need a combination, but sometimes people do need a replacement. It might be a temporary replacement, or it could be people just feel better and they like staying on the enzymes, because it really breaks down food better. And then the last thing, once all that's cleaned up, is to what they call re-inoculate. So some people, their good bacteria will come back to normal just doing all those things. Some people, they do a little better if you give them like a probiotic or a prebiotic, or put them on kefir or yogurt or those kind of things that will repopulate the good guys, so it restores the balance better once it gets out of sync. But what I found in a lot of people is once you get rid of the other things, the foods and the stress and the parasites and all those other things, a lot of times the good guys just come back. They come back to normal when they're not being overrun. But there are some folks who will benefit from adding those other things. The other natural way to do that is fermented foods, right? You've heard of people eating kimchi or these different fermented vegetables. That's a natural way of getting your probiotics. And nowadays, it's pretty easy to buy them now in the stores, in the health food stores. Whereas before, you used to have to make your own a lot of times, but it's really popular now. So that's the four R's: remove the bad guys, repair the damage, replace whatever's missing, like enzymes and hydrochloric acid, and then re-inoculate or put the good guys back in the probiotics. That's kind of like a general rule of thumb. And on a dietary standpoint, if someone's just asking me what I should eat, like a basic food plan, the Whole30 is a very basic, simple plan. The word whole30.com, whole30.com. And it's basically no additives, no preservatives. You eat vegetables and fruit, some kind of protein, whether it's animal protein or vegetable protein, and no sugars. It's a no sugar diet, and it's a 30-day program, and most people can do that, and a lot of people feel tremendously better just in that. And it eliminates a lot of the food allergy stuff. Like there's no gluten during that time, no dairy products, so it's really trying to eliminate all the bad guys and see how some people respond. And a lot of people feel better and they lose weight, if they need to lose weight. So that's just like a, there's many variations that you can do. There's something called the plant paradox diet, which is avoiding lectins, it's called, which are in many vegetables and different foods, grains. But I don't go to that right away because it's a little more stricter. The other one is people are having a lot of immune system problems. There's something called AIP diet, which is an autoimmune paleo diet. So it's like Whole30, but much stricter. than Whole 30. So some people really thrive if they have a lot of immune weakness and fatigue, if they do that autoimmune paleo diet. But it does take discipline. And most of these take discipline, but because it requires you to cook and do those different things. If you're got the toxins, you want to get those bad things out of you by doing different detox things that we recommend, different kinds. Sometimes in the process, when you've had these gut problems, then things like your thyroid or adrenal glands or liver might have problems. So sometimes you need some form of natural support for those things. And there's different vitamins and things that you can use. And that's not the case with everybody, but sometimes people need what we call organ support to help them heal a little better. And then on the stress side, there's different relaxation things you can do, like deep breathing exercises, yoga, all these things that calm your body back down to the resting state where we're supposed to be, you know. And that's part of the thing, you know, ideally when we sleep, you should recharge, right, when you sleep. But if you're under stress a lot, you usually don't sleep as well. So you're not getting that resting, restorative time, and your digestive tract needs that restorative time too. It's not just your brain. So any kind of relaxation, going to the beach, really good technique for relaxation. Just sit there and read a book, you know, that's like one of the easiest forms of relaxation there are. And you get grounding at the same time, if you've heard of the grounding, you know, where you're connecting to the earth kind of thing. They've actually showed that lower stress hormones. And then if there's food sensitivities, avoid whatever food is the problem child for at least 90 days, because that'll really help. There are some other foods that are healing for your digestive tract. Not a lot of people like these, but okra, you know, that the slimy stuff that most people don't want to eat. Well, actually, most people eat it, it's fried, right? Which is not the greatest way to eat it. But because that little slimy characteristic is actually good for your digestive tract, it's actually healing. Cabbage and cabbage juice can be really good for ulcers. I mean, really powerful. Jerusalem artichoke. Can help your liver and the gut too. Asparagus. I mentioned slippery elm. Marshmallow root is another herb that is good for the inflammation of the digestive tract. And then I mentioned the licorice root. That's the other one that's pretty powerful. The only thing with licorice root, occasionally if somebody has blood pressure problems, they have to be careful about doing the whole licorice. And that supplement I mentioned, that's DGL, that licorice, that's had the part of the licorice taken out that affects your blood pressure. So that one usually doesn't have any effect on the blood pressure. But if someone was just doing the root itself, you know, or the tea, and they had blood pressure problems, they could possibly have higher blood pressure. It's rare, but it can happen. So we always caution people with that one. But those are more food-based ways, you know, to kind of, because I like to, Hippocrates also said, let food be your medicine, right? And so that should be the foundation of our medicine stuff. Our medicine cabinet is what we eat, put in our body. I think that was pretty much everything that I wanted to cover. And the probiotics, as I mentioned, if that's necessary. What they're finding with probiotics, because a lot of people have been doing them the past 5 years or so, because there's so much news, is they're finding that if you take one type of probiotic all the time, sometimes you actually get too many of those types in your digestive tract, which then become a problem. Because normally if you're eating good and you're not stressed and everything's okay, your body will balance out all of that naturally. But if you're adding in one particular kind of the same, especially if it's those really high amounts, you know, billions and billions of these things, that it actually pushes it too far the other way and they start having problems down the road. So I tell people if they want to take probiotics on a regular basis that they should actually rotate them, like two or three different kinds of probiotics, different types, so that it's not the same one they're doing all the time. And then maybe take a break every once in a while, take a month off of doing them and just let your body do its thing. You know, as long as you're eating well and not stressed out and eating tons of sugar, it should stay balanced, you know, for the most part. And that's the other thing. In your packet was a little sugar quiz, but sugar will definitely wreck your gut. There's no doubt about it. It feeds the bad guys is what it does. It doesn't help anything else. So that's the one big caveat is. And if you look at the sugar consumption, so I don't know if you guys have ever heard those numbers. In the early 1900s, the average person ate about 10 pounds of sugar a year. And in the year 2000, that was like around 120, 130 pounds of sugar a year compared to the early 1900s. So our body's not meant to have that much sugar. You know, the fruit and a little bit of honey is like the main sugars that you'd normally eat, not like gobs of it and soda, and every food that you eat almost has sugar in it. So that's another reason I think why things have changed so radically is because the body just isn't meant to handle that much sugar on a daily basis. It's just not supposed to do that. And that's why some people, when they do keto or some of these other things, they feel good for a while. It's just, I think keto is just too hard to follow for most people. It's good short term, but I just don't recommend it for long term use. Because the Whole30, something like that, is a great program for whole long term use. And it's not as hard to follow. You know, keto is so just so extremely hard to follow. You know, unless you're really dedicated to losing some weight and trying to hang in there. But it becomes, in my opinion, it becomes almost like a, you know, an anchor around your leg or something, you know, of, I'm doing keto, sorry, I can't have that. You know what I mean? So I want health and food to be something you don't have to labor too heavily over, you know? And when it becomes something you always think about, or it's like, oh, I can't do that because of this, because of, you know, I can't eat that, those many carbs, then that's not a good way to do it. You know, you want to have fun with life too, and your food, you know, it's supposed to be a good thing, not a chain around your neck. So any questions so far on anything? So there are some tests. One of them is a urine test. I forget the name of it, but they check for certain markers that are natural byproducts of your digestion, right? And when you do a urine, this particular urine test, those markers shouldn't be very high in the urine. If they are, that means it's kind of leaking into your system through the gut. So, and I can't remember the name of the particular one, but the urine test is probably the most popular one that they use for that. And there are some other markers they use, but that's the most common one.
Can you send it to a lab?
Yep. If you just do a urine test and
Quest or
send it to,
something at home?
I'm not, I'm sure Quest could do something like that.
And that's caused from eating
The wrong
food.
foods, or junky food, or and or the stress factor I mentioned, and then these infections that get in your gut, like the candida or parasites or those kind of things.
See if you have the parasites too, or
No, that particular leaky gut test, the urine test, is just for the see if it's leaky. It doesn't tell you why. And even the problem with testing for parasites is that the tests are not reliable. I've just seen too many people come in here with problems. Oh, I got tested for parasites. I didn't see any. And then I do my muscle testing system of try to figure that out, and they show up in my testing, and we treat them with something natural, and they feel better. You know, so that's one area the tests are not real good. Things like candida, you can test for that fairly reliably, you know, in a stool test or different markers, but not so much on the parasites. Just not,
that's caused
and
from.
unless you have worms. Worms, they can usually find those.
How do you get these? It's bad bacteria, like parasites.
Yeah, parasites. You get them through many different ways: food, water. You can get a lot of produce. You know these recalls that you may hear on like bagged lettuce and those kind of things. It's not parasites, but it's usually some form of bacterial contamination that got in. Someone eats it, gets really sick, you know. But the parasites don't always do that. They don't always make you real sick. They just throw off your digestion and make you look kind of miserable. You can still function, but you're kind of miserable. It's not, and you pick up the parasites from your pets too. Cats more so than dogs, but cats are notorious for carrying those things.
The animal pet touching your face or
Mm-hmm.
something,
Yep.
or
Yep.
yeah,
Yeah.
or sharing food with it or whatever.
Or just petting them, right? You know, if you watch a cat, it's constantly cleaning itself and licking its fur. So if you happen to pet it right after it licks its fur, and you put your hand on your face or something, you can pick it up.
When you were talking about kimchi and the fermented food, does that include pickled food, like pickled beets?
Yes.
Pickled okra?
It's just that most of the traditional techniques that they use commercially, they destroy the good guys because they usually pasteurize it, you know, or take it to high temperature to make it last longer. So if you do your own pickling, yes, it would be much better because they typically don't do the other bad stuff required. But
yeah.
Pickling is a form of the fermented foods.
Okay.
Yeah. It's just the techniques that, like you can see on YouTube or whatever, to make your own, usually produces more of the good guys than just traditional pickling. But pickling is a form of probiotics. Yeah. So, yeah, that can be good, very beneficial.
Yeah, because I have friends that make pickled beets.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're good for you. They're good for your liver, too.
Right, yeah.
Yeah.
So these tests tell whether it's your stomach or your liver or your kidney or esophagus, I think is what you said.
Well, that was like an upper GI. If you were trying to look at, you know, is there any ulcers and those kind of things, then the basic thing is the upper GI for that to study. I mean, they do the scope down there to make sure there's no erosions or those kind of things. And there's value in doing that, but then you have to figure out why it's there. And there is one thing you can rule out medically there is there's a bacteria, H. pylori, right, that is common sometimes in ulcers and erosions. And they can do I don't know if they can do a blood test only, but a lot of times when they do an upper GI, they'll do a sample of the stomach to make sure that bacteria is not in there. Because if you have high concentrations of that, it can really cause trouble to your gut. They would give you an antibiotic. Sometimes you have to do that if it's really bad, and then take probiotics, you know, to help. But sometimes you can get rid of it naturally. But that is one reason medically that if those are high in your stomach, you're more likely to have reflux and ulcers. Yep.
Not good.
Any other questions? You guys are easy. Yeah.
When you can get cleaned out and get this going, do you have to take supplements?
So we use supplements to assist in the healing process. So depending on how people's diet, how good they eat, and their stress levels and everything, people may or may not need continued support. Like I mentioned, if somebody's older, their 60s, they say, man, ever since I started taking that digestive enzyme, I feel so much better. Some of those folks just like staying on that kind of thing because it helps the digestive process. But I'm not a fan of putting people on a lot of supplements because it's hard to take, and you still want to get to the causes and get the diet as good as you can, and minimize the amount of supplements, because a supplement is supposed to be to supplement, right? It's not meant to replace something. It's meant to supplement, and sometimes you need things like, you know, herbs to knock out a parasite or something like that. But that's short term, you know, it's just to get rid of the problem and then take a probiotic if you need it or something like that. Yeah. I mean, there are some people, because of their lifestyle or whatever, they'll do better on like a B complex or something, you know, but the cleaner your diet is and the less stress you have, the less supplements you need. That's kind of been my experience with people. Yeah.
Eating like onions and garlic.
Yeah, those are natural foods, you know, to help keep your body balanced. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, kill some of the bad guys.
Yep, sometimes it's not enough just to do like the garlic or something to knock out something, but depending on the type of organism it is, you may need a herb or a homeopath to get it out of your body. But yeah, the better of those natural foods that you eat, then less likely to have those other problems long term. Anyone else? You're good. She's trying to think of something.
No, I
don't. Okay.
So it's really no ass.